All right, it's that time. Welcome to the weekly biofuels webinar. This week, George is on vacation, so you guys are stuck with just me. Just remember that if you have any questions, please drop them in the Q&A section or in the chat, and we will answer those at the end of my initial presentation or ramblings, however you want to think about it. So it's been another volatile week in the world vegetable oil markets, capped off by soybean oil futures locking limit up yesterday. There wasn't any particular news. I called around and talked to a bunch of people yesterday. I couldn't find any particular news that that suggested that soybean oil should be up 2.5 cents in the nearby yesterday. There was an announcement, or I guess some of the details of the infrastructure spending bill leaked, and maybe that had a little bit of it. A little bit of it was certainly fund spreading, both oil meal spreading and bull spreading in the soybean oil curve itself. But those things have happened before. So it felt a little bit like there was somebody that obviously really needed to buy soybean oil futures yesterday. I would have expected futures to back off maybe a little bit today, and certainly they're not doing that. So either there is something that has changed that I just haven't figured out yet, or whoever it is that really needs to buy soybean oil futures really needs to buy a lot more soybean oil futures. That move yesterday, well, the day before, actually kind of offset some declines early in the week last week that took at least soybean oil back down to its 20-day moving average. But it bounced right off of that and is back up and at new highs, suggesting that maybe the next leg of the rally that started way back almost a year ago at this point has started, and prices may continue to go higher. That said, the spreads between soybean oil and palm oil have gotten to levels that seem crazy to me. But they've seemed that way for a little while. And so at this point, I've kind of given up on trying to say where I think the real fundamental value is there. The trend is obviously higher. At some point, that's going to reverse. It may be that this month's MPOB report or next month's MPOB report will provide the catalyst that does that. But estimates for production during the first 20 days of March suggested that output was up like 40% over the same period in February. Exports were up 6%, but still that suggests that that inventories are probably going to grow at the end of March rather than shrink. And that doesn't indicate to me that the spreads are going to start to narrow, or the spread between soybean oil and palm oil is going to start to narrow. Maybe more importantly, the spread between soybean oil and heating oil reached an all-time record high yesterday, implying that the profitability of production of biodiesel, at least from soybean oil, has never been as poor as it has been this week, I suppose. That said, a lot of that implied profitability has been offset by strength in RINs, and then of course there are other credits, and the LCFS credit, which was not available historically. So there are some reasons that spread can continue to go higher, but we made some pretty significant changes to our forecast this week based in part on the level of that spread and the acceleration that we've seen in the increase in that spread. So let's kind of get into it. Let me share my screen. One thing we didn't really change is our forecast for soybean oil futures or canola prices or palm oil, really. The decline last week had taken prices down towards the bottom end of the range, and so the movement up has taken them back up towards the upper end of the range. if this is the beginning of a new leg higher, we may have to adjust the front end up a little bit. But at least at this point, we felt pretty comfortable with our forecast. That said, I'm going to kind of jump over to our biomass-based diesel forecast and talk about this a little bit, because the changes that we made here really drive the changes that were made in the veg oil balance sheets. So last week we got EMTS data from the EPA for February. And while we did see a slight increase in production and the average daily output went up in February for domestic biodiesel production, it didn't go up as much as it typically does in February. And it was well below what our forecast suggested. Given what we're predicting for the HOBO spread over the balance of the year, we adjusted our forecast to more closely align with the implied trend line. Now, the HOBO spread is not a great tool for forecasting biodiesel production, but last year it did seem to at least go in cycles where there was a trend at one level, so there would be a trend at this level, and then there would be another trend sort of down here where you could kind of line up monthly production. And we came into the February data with domestic biodiesel production that was probably a bit optimistic. And so we cut a fair amount out of our forecast. We cut, I think, 240 million gallons out of our annual forecast. Just again, based on the fact that through the first 2 months, January's data was pretty much in line with what we expected. February came in, I think, about 10 million gallons below what we expected. And given the sharp rise in the HOBO spread and coupled with at least a pause in the increase in RIN prices last week, I felt like it was probably time to address that and to try to incorporate some of the rationalization of biodiesel production that we're going to see as more renewable diesel capacity starts to come online. We also made some changes in our domestic renewable diesel production forecast. We under the D5, we cut some production. That was just to get the monthly numbers to line up in a way that looked reasonable over the rest of the year. I think we cut about 25 million gallons out of that that particular fuel category. So not big in the overall scheme of things. I think combined, our domestic renewable diesel production is about 1 billion gallons for this year. And we offset that reduction with an increase in foreign generation under the D4 fuel category, again, to sort of line that up better with the data that we had gotten so far. Of course, we may make additional adjustments to our forecast as the data comes in. But based on what we're seeing right now, this is kind of our best guess. Now, there's some chance that we had overshot to the high side, and now we've overshot to the low side. Again, we'll try to adjust that as changes in the HOBO spread and changes in as we get monthly data from the EPA. Those changes obviously had an impact on feedstock demand, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute or two. The one thing that I would note is that it takes a while for those changes to flow through, or for me to drive those changes through all of the balance sheets. And so if you look at the calendar year balance sheets today, those numbers don't reflect the changes yet. I'm working hard and trying to get that done, and hope to get that done in the next day or two. Certainly by the time that we put out next week's report, the calendar year balance sheets will reflect the changes that we made to our biodiesel production assumptions today. They do in our in our marketing year balance sheets, but to do the calendar year balance sheets, there's a little bit more adjustment that needs to occur, and we have to go through all of the low CI feedstocks individually to make those adjustments. For gross margin, our gross margins have obviously dropped pretty significantly here for biodiesel with the run up in soybean oil prices. This will bounce back a little bit potentially if energy prices recover. One of the things that has contributed to the sharp rise in the hobo spread outside of the gains in soybean oil obviously has been a back down in energy prices, with WTI falling below 60 today. And so that has an impact on heating oil prices, and that's had a significant impact on biodiesel profitability. With credits, it looks a little bit different, but still there's a pretty significant drop off there. For our RIN price forecast, this shows RIN prices kind of peaking out here, and that's due to the formula that we use and the way that we forecast the hobo spread. We made some changes to the way that we forecast the hobo spread this week, where we changed the input for heating oil from the forward futures curve to something that reflects forecasts that are not just the futures market. And so that's the reason for the difference here. RIN prices, like I said, were a little bit weak last week. We'll see if this real weakness sets in. If it doesn't, then we probably are going to go back and modify the way that we forecast RIN prices yet again, just because it doesn't necessarily reflect what we're seeing in the marketplace. But this is what the model is kind of spitting out this week. And LCFS credit prices, still the same basic forecast that we've had with a little bit of modification. This has come up just a little bit here, not that much, like 50 cents, but still a slow trend lower as more renewable diesel capacity comes online. All right, now over to vegetable oils. So the changes that we made reduced our forecast for soybean oil usage and biodiesel production by about 300 million pounds. We chose to offset that reduction with an increase in our forecast for non-biodiesel usage. Now, this comparison against the USDA includes renewable diesel production, but what I'm talking about is actual non-biofuel usage that you'll see in the calendar year balance sheets when we get those updated. We saw a big drop in non-biofuel usage last year, and we're projecting a big drop this year. That's one of the things that I've kind of struggled with. So the ability to add something back to that is something that I felt a little bit more comfortable with. I could have also offset it with a reduction in imports. You can see our import forecast is about double USDA's, but I think that crushing in the summer is probably going to slow down, and the availability of soybeans is going to be pretty tight in the summer before we start the next harvest. And crush margins during the summer are near historic lows. And so I think that while if you look at the series of soybean oil imports so far for the marketing year, it doesn't really suggest that we'll hit the 700 million pound level. We have a pretty big increase built into the back end of the forecast that gets us to that level. again, this is something that we're going to kind of monitor and we'll adjust as we go forward. But this is the way that we're choosing to address it now. I could have also maybe increased exports, but given the spread between soybean oil and palm oil, I think that it's tough to see where we get increased exports. And certainly the movement in soybean oil export commitments over the last month, 6 weeks has been pretty flat. And so bumping up the export forecast didn't really feel, I wasn't really comfortable with that either. That ended up taking our ending stocks down just a touch. I think we were just over 1.6 billion pounds before, and now we're just under 1.6 billion pounds. For canola oil, that is probably where we saw the biggest change, because canola oil is sort of the residual feedstock for biodiesel production that cut our projection for canola oil usage and biodiesel production about in half, from about 1.1 billion pounds to, as you can see, just over 600 million pounds. I offset that with a reduction in U.S. imports, an increase in non-biodiesel usage, and an increase in ending stocks. Any one of those could be off. If there was one that I had to guess was probably more likely to be off than the others, it would be canola oil imports, especially if, like I talked about when I was talking about soybeans, if the at the end of the summer, the U.S. is really short vegetable oils, and particularly the demand for non-biofuel usages remains really strong, then U.S. imports could be a little bit stronger than we're anticipating. However, that said, there's a lot of competition for Canadian canola oil right now. And while the Canadians are crushing like mad, we don't really expect their exports to increase that much this year relative to last year, when we expect crush to be about the same as it was last year. And there's a lot of demand for canola oil from China. Now, the Chinese rapeseed oil or rapeseed crop looks like it's going to come out of dormancy in fairly good condition. And so maybe by the time late summer rolls around, the Chinese demand will slow a little bit, and that will free up some availability for canola oil exports to the U.S. And in that case, then our number is probably a little bit low. It may also be that that by the time we get there, this number is also maybe a little bit low. It's a big cut, and it's kind of a drastic cut. But because we use canola oil as sort of the balancer based on an assumption about total feedstock use, just looking across the other feedstocks, this is kind of where we end up. However, that doesn't really mean that we expect a big decrease in canola oil prices. We expect canola oil prices to remain strong, primarily due to the demand from non-biofuel users. With the demand for the low CI feedstocks and for soybean oil rising pretty sharply from renewable diesel producers, non-biofuel applications, canola oil is going to be not the only game in town, and certainly the expense of canola oil relative to the other vegetable oils makes it sort of the last choice. But there's not going to be a lot of other choices, I think, by the time that we get into the end of the summer. And so we expect canola oil prices to remain pretty well supported. For palm oil, again, we didn't really change our palm oil forecast. The market reacted more on Monday to the cargo surveyor data suggesting that that import or exports rather rose about 6% during the first 20 days than it did to the production prediction. And then overnight, palm oil futures were up again. That's in part because of the strong move in soybean oil prices yesterday. But for the moment, traders seem to be more focused on export demand, which has been really anemic. And they expect business with India to pick up. Now, India has started to institute measures to try and slow the spread of COVID. They're experiencing a tick up in the infection rate. And so that assumption that exports are going to continue to accelerate might be a little bit optimistic, but at least that's what the market seems to be focusing on at the moment. With Ramadan starting on April 13th, there's typically a surge in export demand ahead of Ramadan. And so I think that's part of what traders are looking at. But we made some adjustments to our monthly forecast this week that, again, suggests that you probably see end of month inventories rise about 100,000 tons in March, which is not a big increase, and it doesn't take us up to any crazy number. It takes us up to like 1.4 million tons. But given sort of the one bullish news piece and then the three or four relatively bearish news pieces, the fact that the market chose to focus on the bullish piece, and again also was a bit dragged higher by soybean oil, probably give some indication of what traders' biggest fears have been, which is just a real slowdown in the demand for world vegetable oils. And we've seen world vegetable oil cash prices come off a little bit. For canola oil in Canada, the cash price dropped back below $14.50 per ton this past week, but that was before we saw the real surge in soybean oil prices and soybean oil futures. And so I think those cash prices will probably start to head higher again until we get to until we probably get to the rapeseed harvest in China. I think if that crop is really good, then there's some chance for the world vegetable oil backdrop to turn a little bit more bearish, certainly than it's been over the last several months, I would say. But we didn't make, despite the fact that we made the monthly changes, we didn't make any changes to our annual forecasts in palm oil futures. All right, with that, I will open it up for questions. And we have several, so I appreciate that. Could you please explain your view on the refined crude degum spread in SBO and how you see this playing out? Can that spread do some of the work to ration SBO balance sheets? It definitely can, and I think it probably will. I think we've talked a little bit on this webinar about this idea that we have sort of a stair-step function in processing capacity and crushing capacity where things get really tight, these spreads kind of blow out, and that attracts investment into crushing and into processing. And I think we're in one of those periods right now. And in fact, one of my colleagues is doing a study right now, going around trying to figure out exactly where crushing capacity is going to expand, exactly where processing capacity is going to expand. We've seen the announcement from Cargill a couple weeks ago saying that they were going to make major investments in expanding their crushing and processing capacity. So I think that will naturally start to ration a little bit of soybean oil. However, we have also gotten a question recently about the ability for renewable diesel producers to use categories, for lack of the correct word, of of soybean oil. So instead of RDB, maybe just degummed, or maybe even just sort of crude. And that's possible. It depends a lot on the catalysts that are chosen, but there's a little bit of flexibility there. And so I think that for those renewable diesel producers that aren't planning to add sort of pretreatment at the front of the plant, there is a possibility that there will be a little bit of flexibility in the particular type of soybean oil that they use. And so the spreads in that type of work may not be as great as you would expect just on the face of it. Just if you expect everybody has to use the same kind of soybean oil, then that's sort of one outlook. But if there's a little bit of flexibility there, and there is, then there are some opportunities to do something that's a little bit different and get around some of the bottlenecks that we are expecting. All right. Financial Times wrote this week that Chinese piglet prices soar as swine fever in China raises supply fears. Is there a correlation between animal fat prices and wholesale pork prices? The animal fat prices tend to be better correlated to their substitutes than their sources, primarily because they are a byproduct of production. And so animal fat prices tend to be better correlated with either corn or soybean meal or soybean oil or other fats and greases than they tend to be with, say, lean hog futures or lean hog prices, something like that. That said, the outbreak of ASF in China this time around is certainly having an impact on production, and certainly having an impact on U.S. pork futures and prices in China. However, I don't think we're going to go through the same thing that we just went through a couple of years ago, where you're going to see a big reduction in the Chinese pork herd or pig crop, because one, the strain of ASF that's circulating in the country is not as deadly as the prior strain. From what I understand, there was an attempt to make a vaccine that didn't necessarily work out as well as hoped, and it kind of then released this weaker strain of ASF into the pig herd. But also, as a result of the last outbreak of ASF, what you've seen is a change in the Chinese pork production industry, where it's become much more concentrated. There's been a lot more investment in that area. And so you've had a shift from a situation where you had very small farmers with just a couple of pigs in the backyard to an industry that looks much more like the U.S. industry does, with large scale production and all of the attendant sort of security measures and biosafety features and that kind of thing. And so not only is the ASF outbreak or the strain not quite as deadly as the last time, but also I think they're probably a little bit better prepared to deal with it. Now, all that said, obviously it's having an impact on Chinese prices and on frankly on Chinese crush margins and everything else. And so it's not something that that can be totally ignored, but I think you don't need to go to the doomsday scenario where you say, no, the Chinese pork or the Chinese pig crop is going to shrink by 40% or 50% or something like that. Do you still expect waste feedstock prices to see relief in May? So waste feedstock prices, Ryan typically forecasts, but I can give you my opinion on the price outlook for that. And that is that I think as you see more widespread vaccinations, you probably are going to see a pickup in restaurant, people going out to restaurants and that kind of thing. And so I would expect to see that the supplies of Yuko and yellow grease probably increase as we move forward. May starts to be the summer months in the north. And so even if there is still some restrictions in place, I would imagine that outdoor dining will start to pick up. I know I'm in Florida, and here it has been amazing to me how crowded the restaurants have been throughout the last 6 months, 8 months. Whenever they opened back up, people were ready to go out and go out and eat. And I think that there will probably be more confidence for people to do that as they get vaccinated. So that will weigh on those prices a little bit, that extra supply or that additional supply, growth in supply, however you want to think about it. The big question will be is how much additional demand comes on between now and May. And we think that there's a significant bump in demand from renewable diesel, new renewable diesel plants sort of between now and July. And then between July and the end of December, then there's another big surge. So capacity doesn't quite double between now and July, but then between July and December, it sort of doubles again. And so even if you do get a surge in production, then I think that there's a chance that demand outstrips that surge in production. Now, how much of this has been front run by the movement that we've seen in prices? It's a little bit tough to say. The break in prices last week, I didn't think was necessarily surprising given how quickly we had moved higher. But I think that a steady move, just a march higher in prices, is going to be tough, especially as we get into the U.S. growing season. And if that starts to go well and we get a big increase in soybean acres, a lot of these things are really correlated with soybean oil prices. We may get some of the speculative long to come out of the market, and that may weigh on prices a little bit for both soybean oil and for the fats and greases, just because, again, they're so correlated. Is there going to be feedstock shortage for renewable diesel production in the next 5 years? The way that we forecast our feedstock demand basically is we have a list of all of the plants, and we do this for renewable diesel and co-processing, I should say. For biodiesel, we do things a little bit differently. But for renewable diesel and co-processing, we have a list of all the plants that we have heard announcements for, that we've talked to, and we have some assumptions about their feedstock mix and their annual capacity and when they're going to open. And what we do basically is we take that list and we look at it and we try to balance the feedstock demand with the production forecast that we essentially get from the EMTS data. And it's difficult to do, I will say. It becomes increasingly difficult to do, especially starting in 2022, 2023. But there does seem to be enough feedstocks to meet all of the plants, at least that have been announced so far. We also anticipate that there will be the development of some advanced biofuels or the adoption of cover crops like camelina, and they will also provide some feedstock supplies that aren't sort of in the feedstock mix right now. I think we get that up to about 150 or 200 million pounds a month in late 2023. Camelina is something that I think people have differing opinions on. And so I think there are some people that believe ultimately camelina will be grown in a lot of places because it does kind of the growing season matches up pretty well with some of the crops, particularly winter canola. And I think that it's going to be tough to get camelina to be grown outside of sort of the northwestern states, in part because of the type of soil that it likes, but also and probably primarily because the size of the seeds for camelina is so tremendously small, smaller than canola seeds. And I've never been a farmer, but I've spoken to a lot of farmers over the course of my career, and not bad-mouthing canola, but canola is something that Midwestern farmers in particular kind of are shy about growing because it's tough to deal with the size of the seeds. You have to buy special equipment, and it's just harder to deal with smaller seeds than it is to deal with soybean seeds, which are relatively large by comparison. And so camelina seeds are even smaller, and I think that just ups the difficulty level. And so while I think that there will be some adoption, and like I said, we build that into our forecast for the feedstock mix, I don't know that it's going to be sort of a silver bullet that that totally addresses this. So I think over the next 5 years, things are going to be tight. One thing that will certainly help with the feedstock situation is the approval of a pathway for canola oil for renewable diesel. We expect that that's going to happen in late 2021 or 2022. Once you get that, then that kind of opens up the West Coast market to canola oil imports from Canada, helping out the feedstock mix and feedstock demand for a lot of the new renewable diesel plants. But that's not a silver bullet either. So it kind of takes all of these things to get enough feedstocks to meet the demand. If you're really interested in the outlook, we do have an outlook report that we sell that is a 10-year forward forecast for all of the balance sheets. It has projections for all of the low CI feedstocks, U.S. canola oil, soybean oil, and then it has roll-ups. So it has a fats and greases, vegetable oils, and total feedstocks, and it's done on calendar years. If that's something that you're interested in, you can reach out to George or to Aaron, or if you don't know George or Aaron, please feel free to drop me an email and I'll put you in touch with the right person. My email address is Tori, T-O-R-E, dot Alden, A-L-D as in dog, E-N, at thejacobson.com. All right. I think that is all the questions that we have. Thank you, everybody, for joining and listening today. And thanks for all the great questions. We always love it when we get a bunch of really good questions. And this was a great set of questions. Enjoy your week. And we will see you back here next Tuesday.